Okay, the next case is number 05-1544, Kevin Lawler against Nike Incorporated and Nike Retail Services Incorporated. Mr. Fair.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Eugene Fair of Mintz 11, and I represent Mr. Lawler. Now, I'd like to focus on the claim construction issues. I'll rest on our briefs on the doctrine of equivalence issue. Now, an important reason Mr. Lawler appealed this case is because the district court incorrectly construed the claim term a bottom sole to mean, quote, the outsole of the shoe, which is the part of the shoe that contacts the ground and is also the lowest part of the sole, unquote. That construction is incorrect because it improperly limits the term a bottom sole to the outsole, thus precluding the possibility of a bottom sole having a further thin tread layer attached to it. Mr. Lawler's argument is rather straightforward. The district court erred because it did not give full effect to the relational aspect of the claim term in context with the surrounding claim language. The district court did not give effect to the full ordinary meaning of a bottom sole, which is not necessarily limited to the thin part of the sole that contacts the ground. And the district court did not give any effect whatsoever to the open-ended comprising format of the claims. Now, the starting point, of course, must be the 3-2-1 patent.
As a matter of sort of a glossary for the case, as we have these various terms floating around, is it agreed that outsole, that term, means the portion that touches the ground?
Well, the evidence, Your Honor, is that to one of ordinary skill in the art, the outsole is the part of the sole that gives it durability and traction. It's the tread layer. And you can see that on 26-7. It's a thin tread layer.
Okay, so if bottom sole means the same thing in the way the patents are written as outsole, if they mean the same thing, then that is that's consistent with the trial judge's claim construction.
That's the basis that the trial judge found a summary judgment on.
Okay.
Now, the claim, as I said, Your Honor, the starting point, of course, has to be the 3-2-1 patent. It was filed about 13 years before the 046 patent was filed. It was issued for over 10 years. Over a decade, over half of its life before the 046 patent was even filed. The 321 and 046 patents are not legally related because of that decade-long gap between the issuance of the 321 patent and the filing of the 046 patent. Now, the claim term, as I said, that we're dealing with in the context of its surrounding claim language is a bottom sole attached to the bottom of said upper sole. You'll notice that it's just written relationally with respect to the upper sole. All it calls for is a bottom sole attached to the bottom of the upper sole. The claim term actually chosen by the inventor is not the outsole as read into the claim by the district court.
But all the pictures show it as an outsole. I mean, it's hard to say that the inventor contemplated that it be something other than the outsole, since that's in, again, all of the drawings.
Well, Your Honor, in the 3-2-1 patent, he never used the term outsole to describe it. He always described it as the bottom sole.
Okay, but reading the specification, as I'm not an expert in shoe design, but just looking at it, it's shown consistently as the outer sole, isn't it?
For the bottom sole, Your Honor, he has one preferred embodiment. It's shown basically like this without the red here.
You've added the red, right?
I've added the red, and I'll get to that in a little bit. But he did not. There's nothing in the claim specification or prosecution of the patent indicating where Mr. Lawler clearly and unmistakably indicated, using words or expressions of manifest exclusion or restriction, that he was unequivocally importing a novel meaning to the word bottom sole, or that he was limiting it to an outsole, or that he was precluding the bottom sole from having a further ground contacting tread layer attached to it. There's simply nothing like that in the 321 patent.
Why are you using all this language which sounds like language of disavowal? I mean, it seems to me this question is simply what this word means in this context.
Well,
and it isn't necessary, it would seem to me, unless I'm missing something here, to look for some clear manifestation of an intent to disavow something that otherwise would plainly be there. The question is, does bottom sole mean the same thing as outsole?
Well, the ordinary meaning of bottom, the inventor is given the ordinary meaning of the term he chosen in the claim, a bottom sole. It's not nearly as restrictive as the district court implied.
Well, but that's your submission is that's the ordinary meaning, but the submission of the other side is it's not.
Right, but
so
the only evidence from one of ordinary skill in the art was who was Dr. Williams. He said that one of ordinary skill in the art wouldn't consider a bottom sole to be limited to the outsole. Reading the specification, reading the prosecution history.
Did he say the same thing with respect to the 046 patent?
Yes, he did.
Even though the 046 patent says bottom sole or outsole.
He looked at the 046 patent and he came to the conclusion that the 046 patent was using, because of other language in it, was using a bottom sole the same way as in the 321 patent. And he looked at it and said they've used the bottom sole, the word a bottom sole in the specification and outsole, but at the time he claimed the term only, he only used a bottom sole in the claim and indicating an intent not to narrow the scope from the 321 patent because of the references in the 046 to the 321 patent. The 046 is later, and you can't put the cart before the horse, so to speak. You have to look at the 321 patent first.
Am I correct that during the prosecution you proposed an amendment for a closed cup that was rejected by the examiner? I'm looking at page 1976. Very bottom there it says each such cup includes a closed cup shaped cavity. And then we see later in 1986 that applicants' arguments directed towards a closed cavity are essentially rejected because there wasn't support in the disclosure.
But, Your Honor, there were other claims that were allowed in the 321 patent, for example.
If I'm reading that prosecution history correctly, it would seem that you proposed an amendment that would have had a closed cup, a cup that had something beneath it, a part of the midsole perhaps would be a way to say it, and that was rejected by the examiner because of lack of support in the specification.
Well, Your Honor, there was another claim 12 that was based off the same claims. At the time, I believe claim 13 was claim 10, but claim 12 refers to a sole in accordance with claim 10, wherein each cup includes a bottom-shaped cavity interspersed between the top and bottom surfaces of the bottom sole. So you have a cavity. Claim 12 specifically claims an inverted cup interspersed between the top and bottom surfaces. So there was no disclaimer taking that into account.
But those are rejected. Claim 12 is rejected, and the closed cup amendment is rejected by the examiner, suggesting that the prosecution history also saw that the cup would have to be in contact with the bottom or the ground engaging surface of the shoe. There wouldn't be something beneath it.
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is that issued claim 12 is directed to a similar issue, which allows the cup-shaped cavity interspersed between the top and bottom surfaces of the bottom sole, implying that, that it can be closed.
And which claim is that?
Claim 12, the last claim.
Of 321?
Of the 321, 842.
Where?
Now, Your Honor, as we put in our brief, the consequences of the district court's erroneous claim construction is apparent. And let me turn to this drawing. It's an illustration from page...
Wait. No, but claim 12 says the cup, the cavity, goes, as I understand it, between the top and bottom surfaces of the bottom sole.
Yes, Your Honor.
Therefore, it extends all the way from the bottom of the bottom sole, which if the bottom sole means the ground touching element, it goes all the way to the ground.
I don't think it necessarily needs to go all the way to the ground. It just needs to be interspersed somewhere in between the two. That's all it's saying. It doesn't say, it doesn't have all that additional language that you just put in, where it has to, you know, going from the bottom to the top.
But where in the specification is the language that you tell us
sure.
is the appropriate in the support for claim 12?
Sure. In the specification, Your Honor, it says in column 3, this is 841, column 3, lines 16 through 18, alternatively, the cup may be located between a flat bottom surface and midsole 14 to form, in effect, a cup-shaped bubble in the bottom sole.
In the bottom sole.
In the bottom sole. You're saying, referring to a cup-shaped bubble, indicating that the inventor clearly contemplated...
Well, it's not so clear, because none of the drawings show anything below the cup.
Well, Your Honor, the...
And if you read the prosecution history, you gave up a closed cup. So indeed, if you read all of this language you've just given us in light of the prosecution history, it seems to support the reading that Judge Bryson gave to it, because the cup cannot be closed. You gave up on that amendment.
I don't think, Your Honor, that Mr. Lawler gave up on the notion of having...
Well, the examiner rejected
the examiner,
it.
Right, but I don't think Mr. Lawler gave up on the notion of having a cup... the cup interspersed between the top and bottom soles, because that is clearly disclosed.
But the bottom sole engages the ground, therefore the cup would be open, and that seems to be supported by the prosecution history, which says your effort to have a closed cup was rejected by the examiner.
But it is having a cup in the form of a bubble in the bottom sole is disclosed in the 321 patent. In the column and line item that I just went through.
Now, did you assert claim 12, or just the district court refers to claims 1 of the 321 and claim 1
right.
of
the 046. The only asserted claim is claim in the 321 patent is claim 1, and the 046 patent is claim 1.
Why wasn't claim 12 asserted if it reads as you argue now that it does?
Because the for litigation purposes, they only asserted claim 1 in the case, in that patent. And, Your Honor, one more point I'd like to make. This demonstrates the consequences of the erroneous claim construction. As you put in our brief, in accordance with the court's claim construction, Nike or anyone could take this preferred embodiment, put a thin tread layer on it, and completely avoid the infringement, getting all the benefits of the invention. And that's not what the inventor intended. And because of that consequence, the district court found and granted summary judgment.
Okay.
And I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Fair. Mr. Madera.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. I think the court has hit on all the key issues. Judge Rader, you're right. There was an effort to put in a claim to a closed cup. The examiner rejected it on the basis of no support for specification 112, section 1. They acquiesced in the rejection by canceling one claim specifically directed to the closed cup and removing the language directed to the closed cup out of the other claim. It was acquiesced, never argued that the examiner was wrong. It's also correct that this is not a drawing that ever appeared in a patent. This is something that's been modified by counsel.
Yeah, counsel conceded that. Counsel acknowledged that.
Yes, it was not. Because Judge Newman, you asked the question, is there anything in the patent that shows the bottom layers other than an outsole? The answer is no. Every embodiment, they say there's one embodiment, maybe there's two. Each embodiment in the patent shows the bottom layer as the outsole. And why is that important? It's important because what did Mr. Lawler say he was doing here? He said, conventionally, athletic shoe manufacturers have used the midsole as the shock-absorbing layer of the sole, typically a foam. And the outsole is simply the ground contacting portion of the shoe for traction and wear resistance. He said, I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to do something completely the opposite. I'm now going to make the outsole the shock-absorbing element in the shoe. And the way that I'm going to do that is I'm going to disperse within the outsole these cups, inverse cups. And those cups will carry through the midsole.
If you look at column 1, line 66-67, it says the bottom sole is the bottom of the upper sole. It doesn't say that it's the ground contacting portion. It's just the bottom of the upper sole.
You're looking at, Your Honor, could you, that was column 1?
Column 1, 66 and 67. The invention features a shock-absorbent shoe sole. A bottom sole is attached to the bottom of the upper sole. So all they're saying is that maybe the bottom is in relation to the upper sole.
Your Honor, the preamble sets the frame of reference for the claim. Let's look at the claim as a whole. What the preamble says is, it's a shock-absorbent shoe sole, 321 patent. The 046 patent says a durable, lightweight, shock-absorbent shoe sole. That's setting the frame of reference. Within that frame of reference, the...
But he can define his claim terms as he wishes. Why isn't this his definition right here? He's saying the bottom, as he means it, isn't ground contacting. It's just something beneath the upper sole.
He does say that the bottom sole is fastened or attached to the bottom of the upper sole. But what that does, Your Honor, it reads the term bottom out of the claim term bottom sole. And they would have it that that claim language, a bottom sole attached to the bottom of the upper sole, simply read a sole attached to the bottom of the upper sole. It's a bottom sole. In fact, the second use of the term bottom within that phrase is consistent with what Nike says, because it says you're attaching that bottom sole to the bottom surface of the upper sole, the lowermost part of the upper sole. But the bottom sole component itself is the bottom sole, the outsole, and that's what's consistently shown in all of the figures. And as Judge Bryson pointed out, in the 046 patent, Mr. Lawler used the terms interchangeably, said they're the same thing. And in that patent, he links it to his earlier patent. He links the 046 patent to his earlier patent. He says, this is an improvement on my earlier patent. And he says, in fact, the disclosures are in many respects, and in this respect, identical.
What do you think is the right way? Let's assume for a moment that we agree with you that the 046 patent conclusively binds Mr. Lawler to the view that outsole and bottom sole are equivalent, and the terms are interchangeable.
Yes.
Now, the 046, of course, comes well after the 321. What is the way analytically to look at the pertinence of that fact for analysis of the term bottom sole in the 321? Is it an evidentiary matter? Is it some evidence of what the patent applicant meant with respect to the use of that term at an earlier time? How do you propose to use that piece of evidence?
It's an evidentiary matter. It's true, the patents were not formally linked in the sense that the second patent was a continuation of the first.
Right.
But as this court said in LK, in LK they had patents that were formally related. But the court went on to say, there's another reason why we're going to bind the inventor to the statements made in the second patent. And it said, LK affirmatively linked the meaning of these claim terms in the second application to his first application. He put competitors on notice of that language.
Because that was the other way around, I guess. There, here, the putatively broader is the first rather than the second, right? My recollection is that in that case, you had the putatively broader patent was the second one, not the first, right?
But in any event, it was the linkage of the two patents that was used as the second reason for saying we should look to both for what the claim terms mean. Mm. Here, Mr. Lawler, in his on the linkage point, what he says in the second patent, the 046 patent, at column 4, lines 35 to 42, he says, it's an enhanced version. Certain elements described in the 046 patent are also shown and described in the 321 patent. Mm-hmm. Then he goes on in that column at lines 51 to 55, that's column 4 of the second patent, and he says, as with the inventors, previously identified shock-resistant sole, inverted shock cups are disposed within the bottom sole or outsole and passed through the midsole to absorb a substantial amount of shock during use of the sole. He links the two. He says the structure is the same. And he says, as with my previous invention, the language he's describing here is the same language. And I think that serves to link the two, and as an evidentiary matter, to support the district court's finding that the bottom sole is the bottommost portion of the sole. It's the outsole. I think I'll just touch on a few points. Judge Bryson, your reaction is the same as mine. Counsel's approach.
We don't react. We just ask questions.
Oh, I'm sorry. Counsel's approach to the use of the specification, unlike the district court, as the court Phillips said, the specification is always highly relevant to claim construction analysis. It's usually dispositive. It's the single best guide to the meaning of a disputed term. Let's look at the specification. The use that they made of the specification was really to say, let's look for language of disavowal. Is there any language of disavowal in there? But apart from that, they shied away from the specification almost as if it's a dangerous instrumentality. They don't look to it at all. Whereas the district court in its analysis, if we're looking at the claim as a whole and determining the meaning of bottom sole, looked at the specification and said, my interpretation of bottom sole is consistent with the specification. He looked to the drawings, as Judge Newman did. They all show it as the outsole. He looked to the 046 patent. So he looked at the specifications and found that his interpretation was consistent with the specifications. He also looked at the prosecution history. And I believe Judge Rader, when you were going through, you were asking questions about the prosecution history. The prosecution history also supports the lower court's finding as to the bottom sole being the outsole. Because you look, for example, at the rejection that you had mentioned, of obviousness of Hogg and Drew of the New. And Lawler, both Lawler and the examiner, and this is in the 321 patent, the first patent, in dealing with that rejection, they repeatedly equate the bottom sole, the ground packing layers of Hogg and the New, as the bottom sole or outsole, and the whole discussion is equating those two. So the treatment of the inventor during prosecution of even the earlier patent with the prior art was consistent with the judge's, the district court's claim construction, because everything that's being said about bottom sole they're equating to the outsole in dealing with the prior art. So the prosecution history was consistent with it as well. The other two arguments they made were claim differentiation, which I never really understood. They said, well, in the first patent, there were claims 2 and 4 that added additional characteristics of a bottom sole. Indeed, they did. I believe it was claim 4 that said the bottom sole would include rubber. Claim 2 said the bottom sole is a hard material. But I don't see how that claim differentiation helps them on an argument that the term bottom sole is somehow broadened in claim 1. There was no effort by the district court to import a limitation from a dependent claim into an independent claim. Nor is there any argument here that the dependent claims are not narrower in scope than the independent claims. In fact, I submit that the dependent claims are confirmation of the fact that the bottom sole is the outsole, because they're adding further characteristics of the outsole. Make it a rubber, make it hard. The court said in fantasy sports, claim differentiation can't be used to broaden the claims beyond their correct scope. And lastly, there was the use of experts. The expert, Mr. Williams. And I think the warnings that we see from time to time in this court's opinions about treating expert testimony on claim construction with a bit of skepticism, particularly where it doesn't match with the intrinsic evidence, apply here. Moreover, what Lawler says is that the bottom sole, he calls it, he contends it's not a term of art, but something he calls a layman's or a lay relational term. Well, if that's the position, then I don't see what role expert testimony would play in connection with his position. That's really a layman's term. It's not a term of art. So I didn't see what role his expert affidavit purports to play. His position is that's not a term of art after all. But I think that the admonitions of the opinions of this court that say where the expert's testimony really doesn't square with the intrinsic evidence, treat it with a bit of skepticism on the matter of law of claim construction. And I submit that the district court did everything correctly and its analysis was correct and should be affirmed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Madera. Mr. Fair.
Thank you, Your Honor. I only have a few real quick points. There have been a number of cases that say that the claims are not limited to the single embodiment in the specification unless there's a clear intention to limit, unless the inventor used words or expressions of manifest exclusion or restriction. That's in the libel Florsheim case, the Golight case, and the Brookhill case that we cited in our brief. And also Phillips says the same thing. They're not limited to the specific disclosure in the specification. It's the claims, as was set forth in Phillips, that define the invention. Mr. Madera referred to, in the prosecution history of the 321 patent, where the examiner referred to the bottom sole of the new and the Hogg prior art references. Mr. Madera said that he was equating them to the bottom sole. In both of those instances, there was only one possible sole that could be a bottom sole. Danu only had one sole, and one sole only, a one-piece sole. Hav had only a two-piece sole. So the reference to the bottom sole of Danu as being a bottom sole was entirely correct. It doesn't tell anything about whether or not the examiner or Mr. Lawler thought that a further ground contacting layer couldn't be attached, or that only an outsole could be a bottom sole. And the final point I have, Your Honor, is that what Mr. Lawler said 10 years later, after the 321 patent, that really can't be used to determine what was in Mr. Lawler's head 10 years earlier. The reference in the 046 patent, all that means is that Mr. Lawler intended the same, that the term bottom sole in that patent be used the same as he used it in the 321 patent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fair and Mr. Madera. The case is taken under submission.